This is Messenger Insight, a podcast program brought to you by Oklahoma Baptist and the Baptist Messenger.
Welcome to the Insight Podcast. I'm your host today, Amy Cordova, and today I am joined with two pastors from around our state, Sean Nichols in Oklahoma City, and then Eric Costanzo in Tulsa. Welcome, guys.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thanks.
We're excited you're here, and I just want to start off with you guys introducing yourself. So, Sean, go ahead and tell us what church you're at and what you've been doing.
Yep. So I've been in Oklahoma for almost 5 years now, where I'm serving at Wilmot Place Baptist Church on the south side, and we're in a formal church revitalization program. And so we've been working to recover a church that's been historically in decline. And this whole subject of this podcast has been a big part of our reaching out into our neighborhoods and communities around our church to reach people with the gospel.
Yes, you guys are doing such a good job with that. And I want to talk more about the engagement that you've had in your neighborhood, but this refugee initiative has been a big focus of yours that I'm so excited about. Eric, go ahead and introduce yourself as well to our audience today.
I'm Eric Costanzo, pastor at South Tulsa Baptist Church. I've been here for almost 6 years now. It's hard to believe, but served at First Baptist downtown Tulsa before that. And so a lot of my my formal vocational ministry has been here in my hometown. And very, very thankful to be able to have this discussion today on a topic that's very near and dear to my heart.
Yes, and that is not foreign from us. We have highlighted your story before in the refugee work that you guys have done in Tulsa. And many times you guys have served your new neighbors in your community and reached out and loved them and welcomed them really as your own. Now, one statistic that's new to me is that Oklahoma really has received a whole lot of Afghans after many of them came to the United States. And actually, Oklahoma is the third largest recipient of Afghans. How has this new event, how is this different than other refugees coming in to Oklahoma?
Amy, it's incredibly different. Though folks who are older will remember that there have been some other times in the past when Oklahoma has had a very quick reception of a large number of refugees, like the Vietnamese, for example, several decades ago. But for us, this is completely new and different because we have been a part of the resettlement process and the engagement process with so many immigrants and refugees all around Tulsa. And in a typical year, before COVID, before a lot of the refugee programs were slashed, a max for the whole state for a year would be 500 refugees total. And, you know, within a matter of months here, we're going to be receiving 1,800 plus in the state of folks from Afghanistan because of the crisis that developed so quickly. So Tulsa's getting around 850, Oklahoma City around 1,000. And Sean can probably say where they are. I've heard that you all are probably a little more than halfway now. And so are we. We're at probably 450 of the 850 who have arrived. So that means the other folks are still sitting on military bases, waiting for their final processes to get them here to Tulsa or to Oklahoma City. And boy, it's just crazy. I mean, that the volume is so quick. And I'll just say on that note of Oklahoma being ranked where we are, to give credit where credit is due, our governor and both Senators Lankford and Inhofe were a big part of that, of pushing Oklahoma farther than probably the capacity of our state would normally. We've already said that we're above our max, but our resettlement agencies were shocked. They were happy, but at the same time, I'm like, wow, we have to do an all call for the community to help us. And that's where our churches were pulled in. I'm sure that's what happened with Wilmot Place too. Like, we're needed right now because this is such an overwhelming number.
Absolutely. There's so many opportunities for churches to get involved, and a huge opportunity for churches to step up and do what Jesus has called us to do, and loving our neighbors, welcoming the strangers into our homes and Feeding the Hungry. There's a lot of cool opportunities, and Wilmot Place is one of those that has gotten involved. Now, Pastor Sean, this is one of your first families that you have received after this whole Afghan crisis happened, and you guys have stepped in full force and engaging the refugee. Can you tell us about your experience?
Yeah, I'd love to. So as I said, we're in revitalization. So we're a church looking for opportunities in our area to reach out. And as you remember, I reached out to you to say, hey, we have no idea how to engage. We've not had the history as Brother Eric and his church has in refugee and resettlement. And so we're very new to that. But, you know, we found in this area, as well as other areas, that the Lord just seems to provide if we'll just take initial steps to be obedient. And so you connected us to some resources and we began to get involved. And the way people have responded in our church has been a miracle. And I just want to add to Amy that the Lord has put a lot of these relationships and circumstances together for us. He directed us, I believe, to the right family for our church. As churches volunteer, those that are trying to help with the resettlement will ask, you know, what is your capacity? How large of a family can you help manage? And so we were able to choose that for what would fit well in our church context. But then even in connecting with that family and trying to build relationships with them, you know, this is not just about supplying resources or apartment furnishings, which is where we started. We were just going to supply an apartment for them to live in and furnish that. But all of a sudden the relationships begin, and then you meet other people that are their friends. And so now we've got a small community of Afghans that we're connecting with relationally and trying to minister to just out of one apartment that we've attempted to furnish. And so it's turned into a ministry for us more than just furniture. And that's, of course, that's what we're looking for as a church in revitalization, is relationships that we can connect with for the sake of the gospel.
What I find so fascinating about what you're doing is you could put this budget money somewhere else. You could repaint a wall or create a new space in your church building. But you guys have decided to say, we're going to go outside the walls. And I know from foster care to Hope Pregnancy Center, you guys have really decided we're going to go outside of ourselves and reach our community. This is what God has called us to do. And one of those ways is serving our new neighbors. And it's incredible the opportunities that you guys have been given as a church that has historically struggled. And now God is revitalizing that really from the inside out in ways. How has this served your church members in not just the people you're reaching, but those who are serving? How has that shifted their mindset or maybe an opportunity for discipleship?
Yeah, one of the consequences of a church in need of revitalization is the fact that we've turned missions and evangelism into a monetary program, right? So we're still all about the cooperative program. We're a big cooperative program minded church. But if we're not careful, it's all about reaching people overseas with money, and it's just a money program. And that really defeats the whole purpose for why we as Baptist churches are involved in evangelism and missions to begin with. And so what we found is that we are only as effective with our money as we're effective with our other resources that God has given us. So the more effective we are in reaching people with the gospel, the more impassioned we are to share our resources with others so they can reach the gospel as well. And so for us, it's been part of a discipleship journey with our congregation that the more we need to engage with intentional discipleship and every member evangelism, really begins to reshape the heartbeat of our church. And so this has given us that opportunity to do so. And I just want to make a plea, if I could, that this need is so great in our areas. Eric made mention of, we are right at about 2 weeks ago, we only had 200 refugees hit Oklahoma City. And so there's still a tidal wave coming, and there's still time for churches to get involved in helping connect with these families. It's not too late. The wave is not already passed. The season is not behind us. And I think what we'll find is, as we get people involved in intentional evangelistic opportunities, they're a lot more comfortable to share the gospel as those opportunities just present themselves in daily life. And we're still helping these families this week. Our Afghan refugee family, she's pregnant. And so the caseworker is taking her to get an ultrasound. And so they were looking for childcare so the husband could go with her to that appointment. And so our church is hosting that. This is the first opportunity they're going to have to be on our church campus with us and to see who we are and really what we do in brick and mortar style. And so we're really excited about the relationship, and our church has been the ones to respond to that. And I think it helps them reach others with the gospel.
So you guys get to babysit. Is that right? Yeah. That is so fun. And babysitting doesn't cost any money either. So there's ways to get involved that you don't have to financially contribute to necessarily, but like watching children while they go do an ultrasound. What life-giving opportunity that is for your church to get involved.
And Amy, if I could just add as well, I had an intention. I wanted to deliver a TV. They needed a better TV, and a member had just, through divine providence, provided one after we had the apartment all set up. And I just wanted to make a quick trip and deliver a TV. And I stopped by the apartment to do so, called ahead to drop that off. And I got to tell you, the need is so great. As part of their custom, I sat down to a mid-morning breakfast that they were offering me. And of course, as an American, I'm watching my watch because I've got things I've got to get done that day. I spent the next 30 minutes teaching him how to use his thermostat in his apartment, how to run the coin-operated laundry machines downstairs. And before it was all said and done, a four-hour trip to Walmart turned into a shopping excursion and a trip to the cellular store and a trip to Dollar General. And I ended up missing our staff meeting because there's so many needs for a new culture to land here in America where they've got no frame of reference. And even their religious worldview is completely different than what we expect. We find that's the greater need. The apartment was just the start, but the greater need is really ministering to them with where they're living.
Yeah. So a thermostat is a tool. A shopping trip is a tool. Babysitting is a tool. All so that we can share the hope that's found in Jesus.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, Eric, you guys have been in this work for a while, and you really began the Afghan work by meeting people at the airport. And I would love for you to just unpack a little bit of that and how your church has been involved with these efforts.
Well, we're still in charge of the airport. And so Tulsa has probably taken a little bit of a different approach in that our Catholic Charities folks here, which is our resettlement agency, they have gone to some of the major partners, us being one and a couple of others. Some are churches, some are not. Interestingly, one is a synagogue. So it is interesting to see the Jewish community, the Christian community serving the Muslim community. But they basically parceled out. We need these big things taken care of. And we, my missions minister, Karen, and our large growing refugee volunteer group that we've had for 5 years, we went all in. So we're in charge of the airport. We actually work with Homeland Security. We're able to now get our translators a security badge to go to the gate and meet the folks so they don't have to. We've had folks not know to walk out to baggage claim and they get stuck at the gate. And you have to try to find an airport employee and explain to them the problem. So now we've really built great relationships at the airport. In fact, I think that the airport wants to hire away my missions minister, but they can't do that. So they let us park in the taxi lanes with our buses. And so we're in charge of the greeting. We have a space they've given us in the airport where we can sit the families down and just give them snacks and water and stuff for a minute because they're exhausted. And most of them have never flown commercially. Their only flights were to these military bases on cargo planes and military planes. And so we get them oriented. And one of the things that I said from day one, if a child is arriving, and Sean can tell you lots of kids are coming with the Afghan families, we have a child at the airport from our church. So we invite families with kids be there because those kids, they don't speak English, most of them, but they speak child. And so if they see a child, they know they're safe and they smile and they get to know each other. And the moms, I've noticed that now because we've welcomed 450 plus people at the airport. Wow. The moms always relax when they see other children there. And, but then we also transport from the airport to their first lodging, which is a hotel typically. And then others come alongside us and have a meal for them at the hotel and like a full meal. And then they go ahead and start their cultural orientation that night when they arrive. And so, or that day. So anyway, it's a big team effort, but it has, just as Sean described it, we're involved at that macro level so much that it could just become like a machine, you know, where we just take care of making sure all the details are covered. But, you know, we're doing this in a Christ-centered way. So we want to be more personal than that. And so we are looking for ways to get these families back. We've already had the first 200 or so who came have already been to our church for a big event. The second wave that's come now, we'll have them here this Sunday afternoon for a special event. And it just, we just try to get all of them together so they can have some Afghan fellowship time. And we provide the meal, the buses and everything to get them here. When we work with local school districts and banks to provide some of that. So it's really cool. Our whole community's jumped in. But we're also seeing on that level of the personal families that we've made some special connection with. We get to see them regularly. And what we need, and Sean hit on it, we're about halfway through. Oklahoma City may not be halfway through, just in the first part of receiving, which is just like, I mean, it's exhausting, honestly, because it's just a wave and wave and wave of people coming in and making sure they're covered. We need more churches to get to know families. Our churches, we can't reach every single one of these households as folks are getting housed. When they're all in the hotels, we can go see everybody at once. But as they're getting housed, this is an incredible opportunity for our churches in Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Stillwater, places where folks are being resettled, to get to know a family who's probably in their community, to have the same experience as Sean described that will bless your heart because you will get invited in for tea and food and help them in ways that we would need help. If we were just randomly resettled to Kabul, we would need some help to know how to enculturate. And right. So this is a tremendous opportunity. And I know between Oklahoma Baptist, Wilmot Place, South Tulsa, pastors who are watching this, reach out to us if you're near us. And we would love to help you get plugged in because we need more hands in this
effort.
Now, there is such a great need. Apart from your church, you have had a personal story that really touched my heart because, you know, it is a lot of work and we're all so busy and our to-do lists are so long. But this story about your daughter, it really just grabbed my attention because there's so many ways that not only us professionally can get involved, but personally with our families, with our children. And I'd love for you to unpack that story for us.
Absolutely. Well, I made a deal with my wife and kids a long time ago that because I have a tendency to take on more than I should. And, you know, I'm going to the airport and driving the buses a lot. Now, I didn't even know how to drive our church bus until this. But I made a deal with them a long time ago. When I go, you're always invited. And so it's become an opportunity to take sometimes all four of my kids, sometimes just one or two, to the airport, to the transportation, to the taking the women to their sewing classes we have at our church, things like that. So I'm getting a lot of extra quality time with my kids, and also them, they're really involved in this, and their hearts are just really opening up and saying, you know, we would do anything for these families. So it's amazing to see how, as Sean described, mission right here at home, taking root in my kids' hearts. But yes, my youngest daughter, one of the first families we welcomed, there was this little girl who came out, and she's just a sweet, gregarious little girl. And for whatever reason, though, they don't speak the same language, they just locked eyes and they became best buddies. And they hugged and they held hands through the airport. I was just like, you know, God, what is happening? This is amazing. And then the little girl had two necklaces on and she took one off and she gave it to my daughter because we give teddy bears to all the kids. I should have mentioned that at the airport, just as kind of like a safety gift, you know? And so my daughter had given her the teddy bear. And so she took off a necklace and gave it to her. So since then, we had put them on FaceTime and they, as you saw in that article, Amy, they giggled and laughed, even though they couldn't talk to each other. They're showing each other their rooms. And well, since then we started bumping into them. I mean, Tulsa's a metro is like a million people. We started bumping into them places. Like God was like, these two girls are going to be in each other's lives. And so now every Tuesday night, we just go pick that little girl up and she spends Tuesday evening with us.
Oh my goodness.
So it's been really amazing. And she's going to school now. So every week her English is getting better. And then she's teaching us Pashto words and she laughs because we can't pronounce them correctly, but she's becoming a real sweet little part of our family. And I don't know how long that will be possible, but I hope it is for a long, long time. So it's been real, real special. And we've got to know her whole family real well. I think one of the things there, Amy, I'll say quickly, is that she has seven brothers and she's the only girl. So she was dying to have a sister. So I think that they have that kind of friendship. It's pretty special to watch.
The theme I'm hearing from both of you is that your yes was on the table. And since then, God has ordained every detail, every moment, every resource needed. Yes, it's hard work. You said it's exhausting, but it's so worth it. And not only is it worth it to see your church being able to engage in this capacity, but also it's worth it. Like your daughter has a new friend and likely she is always going to be part of that little Afghan girl's story of coming to America and God providing a friend for her the moment she gets into Tulsa. And I just think that is so cool how God ordains these moments in such a beautiful way that we really can't even write ourselves from helping them operate a coin machine at the laundry to going shopping. It seems like in every moment, God is using this as an opportunity to say, I'm here and I'm pursuing hearts and I'm after hearts so that they know I'm the hope and the light of the world. It is Christmas season as we're recording this, and we are going into a really busy season in the life of the church. In this new year, what would be, Eric, what do you feel like is the next step for a pastor or a church family, maybe a small group, to get involved in serving this community?
I think the next levels after the rush of getting them, you know, here to Tulsa, into a hotel, into housing, which happens over a period of a few weeks, is exactly what Wilmot Place is modeling. Your small group, your Sunday school class, you know, every church could at least adopt one family and maybe more. And if a Sunday school class would say, we're all in for this family. You know, we, and it doesn't have to, it shouldn't be that way forever. We're not trying to create dependency. We're trying to help folks in this first stage of learning to be in our community. And they know we're Christians. They, even without us having to share the gospel, they know we're Christians and we may be the first Christians they've ever met. And so if that Sunday school class gets to just wrap around that family, and again, not to enable or create dependency, but just in the beginning to help them, teach them how to use a coin operated. That was a brilliant example, to teach them, how we things that might offend Americans that they're not doing on purpose, you know, and to learn then from them, wow, you guys do hospitality way better than we do. It'll be a blessing for those Sunday school classes. So I think that would be it. We can help connect folks to where those families are. And I guarantee you there will be one in the community of each of our churches in Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Stillwater. And yeah. So that would be it. Just get your small group to take a family and adopt them and really plug in for the next year and a half. And then I bet those relationships will last forever.
I love it. Sean, for the pastor who's hesitant, they've heard the news. They know that refugees are here. They've thought about getting involved in this work. What would you tell the pastor who is just kind of thinking about it? what word would you have for them today?
You know, I would say just really spend some significant time in prayer and pray specifically this: is it God's will for me to be personally involved in the Great Commission? And we know the answer to that is yes. And if the answer to that is yes, then how? And what we found, what it sounds like Eric has found in a lot of the churches that they've worked with, is that if you'll commit to the Lord, you'll do this. I think there's two things you're going to find, dear pastor brother, as you step out in faith. One, you're going to find that God amazingly, through miraculous ways, begins to provide exactly what you need, whether it's tangible things. We were looking for several things for the apartment that we didn't know how to find, reached out to some local vendors and told them what we were about doing. They wanted to get involved, and we got some deals that are just crazy good deals, just because God worked that out. And you'll be amazed to see how the Lord will work. It will increase your faith if you'll do that. And man, I can't help but also mention the second, and that is when you connect with the faces of real people and begin to love them to Jesus, there is nothing more rewarding than seeing God begin to work even in small ways in their life. To have your family's little five-year-old girl run up when you're afraid to cross a barrier for fear of offense, to have a little five-year-old girl run up and grab your leg because she's glad that you were there and provided a bed for her to sleep in. It just changes your heart, man. And what starts out to be an administrative task turns into a passion. And I think that's where if we'll put our faith where our feet are, I think God will begin to affect our heart. And so just trust the Lord with it. And I think you'll be amazed what God will do, not only in your life as a pastor, but also in the lives of your church people.
Yeah. Well, the work is great, but our God is so near to those. And I think that's where his heart is. And he tends to bless those yeses in ways that we really can't predict or imagine. And so to hear from both of your stories, what God is doing, not only in you, but in the life of your church and your community, bringing people together really is glorifying his name and making his name known to the nations here in our own backyards. And so it's so neat to see what God is doing in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. If you are interested in getting involved in refugee work in Oklahoma, contact us at the Baptist Building. You can go to our website at oklahomabaptist.org/refugee to find more information. And as these guys said, you're more than welcome to contact their church to find out more information about the work that they're doing. And I know that they would be a connector for you. Thank you for joining our podcast today. If you enjoyed this conversation, we have more like them. You can find more conversations on our website at baptistmessenger.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our print messenger. There's stories in there that aren't on the podcast. So we would love to see you engage in that way and hear what God is doing around our state and around the world. Thank you.
This Messenger Insight has been brought to you by the Cooperative Program and Oklahoma Baptists. Visit us at baptistmessenger.com or your preferred podcast platform. Oklahoma Baptists, advancing the gospel together.